talk to the average teenager of today and you ask them what it is about
pop culture
that they like, and they'll, the first thing they'll say is the beat.
Get yourself addicted.
To the culture pile driver, get addicted to the content. I am Jason Rossi. Can be followed along all social media platforms at Jason D. Rossi. Our little show here can be followed at Pop Culture PD over on Twitter. And if you smash that follow button, it will instantly make you how do you tie that into conspiracies? It will make you clear-minded. And with me, as always, my tag team partner in the podcast sphere. He could be followed along some social media platforms at BillyD2411, on Twitter at BillyYee2411, because he's a bad boy getting booted off there for posting toenail pictures and random stuff from his OnlyFans, which, by the way, is going up for sale coming in October for just 99 cents a month if you use Billy's Big D. He is Billy D. What's going on, man?
I thought I would have a new promo code for October, but I guess that works. Hello. Yeah, here to talk wrestling conspiracies.
Yes, we are. And we are brought in a third man, I would say the leader of the conspiracy theory pack when it comes to the DSG, someone that always would be down to talk conspiracies and kind of pull some conspiracies out of me. He is Rich Keefe of the Dork Podcast, of Gresh and Keefe, which you can hear on WEEI and stream across Odyssey, and also at Keefe21. Rich Keefe, what's going on?
Let the record show, I enjoy conspiracy theories that are safe and harm no one. I am not a proponent of the ones that are very harmful to people. There are a handful of those. I do not subscribe to those. But everything else, I am open eyes and ears.
So where were you on January 6th last year? you can subscribe if you haven't already to this podcast over on iTunes. Find us on Spotify, Google Podcasts, anywhere your podcast can be found. And we are still ranking, Bill, and getting those two listens over
Ghana?
Through India on Ghana, baby. Love Ghana. Thank you, Podomatic, for subscribing over there. There's two listens a week. Goes such a far
It's
way.
Odd because that's an African country, I believe, right? Ghana?
Yes.
Oh, I don't.
Yes, it is.
Wrong Ghana's guy.
Yeah.
Ghana is a country.
But apparently it's a podcasting platform in India, so it's quite confusing.
Can't be right. Can't be right. We're actually huge. Dork Podcast is huge on Zimbabwe. If you hear, ooh, not the country, but just the listening device.
This could be its own conspiracy theory as it is, because I think Finland is apparently not real either.
Doesn't exist.
I have a theory on the Dakotas. We'll save that for later. Okay. And you can also subscribe on YouTube where you can see us anytime. And you can also check out a part of the Dork Shared Gooniverse over on Facebook. Tell your grandma. Merch over at TeePublic. Music, Bill, from Oh Yeah. Is your video gone released yet?
No, and I shot another one. We're having some talks about extra filming, which I'm not crazy about, but I guess we're going to do it.
Uh-oh. Get those hours up. Get those hours. And also, you can check out our podcast nonprofit called Frank Says Hi by checking out franksayshi.com. October 1st at Lifetime Fitness, we'll be having a fundraising event, teaming up with another local nonprofit here in Massachusetts called Handicapable Fitness. Details to follow. You can check out all info there again at franksayshi.com.
Fun or both?
What do you mean?
What? Like a fundraiser or a fundraiser? Like money or just fun? It's an office joke. One over your head. I'm sorry.
They're raising fun.
Yeah.
Well, I'm always attempting to raise fun. But
that was bad on me. Sorry.
That's right. It's only trying to help people, Bill. Jesus Christ. Anywho.
Did you guys just meet? Is this the first time?
If you want to know a little inside on our podcast, every week at about this time, we meet for the first time. So. That's kind of the way we do things. But Bill, we brought Rich Keefe in here. We're all about conspiracies. I know you have a little of some sort of conspiracy, maybe theory, internally with the DSG.
Yeah, so we can get started. Our first, such conspiracy. And they all revolve around one man. So recently, did you hear he got a cat?
I saw via Twitter that got a cat, yes.
Okay, do you know the cat's name?
I don't.
It is actually Billy.
What?
It is. This is not real. So is the cat named after me? Do you believe that conspiracy?
Yeah. It doesn't take much to connect the dots. Your name's Billy. The cat's name's Billy. You were named Billy first. He knew you before he knew the cat. He got a cat. He named him Billy. It's obviously after you. Yes.
It's a real Billy as in him or Billy as in me situation.
Yeah.
Look, but no, he actually named it after Billy Shakespeare, which I think is worse.
Wait,
Nobody called him that. Nobody called him that.
No.
Who has ever referred to William Shakespeare as Billy?
No, it's one of those things, too, where it's like maybe in certain circles, like I call Robert Williams Bob, but like that's just like specific to me and my friends. Right. And like nobody, if I said big play by Bob, nobody would know, you know?
In the great Chris Farley Man Down by the River sketch, when he
may have said,
did he say Billy or Bill when Phil Hartman says something about how David Spade's character is working on his writing? He goes, look at Shakespeare over here. He's like, actually,
I think it was Bill.
It was Bill, not Billy, but yeah. It was close.
So even worse, but still, yeah, we're getting to the point here where, you know, it's still weird either way to name your cat Billy.
Yes.
But yeah, it's also a girl cat, so it's Billy IE, so it still doesn't make any sense. Oh, all right. Now, another rumor. Yeah. The nickname now is Billy Eyelash. So that's even worse.
Wait a second. The cat has a nickname.
Yes. Oh. All right. All right. So we've heard much about the Magneto helmet. Now, I've heard a rumor that it's actually really cool and the Dork podcast is just jealous of it. True or false?
That is false. That thing stinks. That thing stinks. And I was trying to be nice. I usually tend to go nice when people send us stuff, whether it's people we know or people we don't know. But if an item stinks that they send us, we are going to tell you that it stinks, because we can't just put up a bunch of crap items. We're like, it's great. Then people are going to look at it like, what are these guys doing? So no, the Friar helmet, it's a good idea. It's just not symmetrical. It looks like it's awful. Like, it's not functional. It looks like the guy, like, I don't know. It's a mess. It's a
show jeans.
So no, it's just show jeans. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. And so the final one here, because all comedy comes in threes. And this one was kind of debunked for me on, I believe, Saturday, but I still don't believe it. Is Friar's fiance, Lauren, real? I mean, I've met Friar and I've met her. It doesn't seem to add up.
It doesn't add up. I met her for the first time as well this past weekend. So if you had asked me this on Friday, I would have easily said no chance. But do you think he could have, like...
Was she there under duress?
Do you think she's an actress?
Boom. That would be the thing. That's the question. Because she wasn't... I don't think she was under duress. She seemed to be pretty comfortable and it was happy to be there. But if it was... Maybe it's one of her gigs. Maybe she's just playing a role.
It's a should I have bought this, but he didn't tell anybody about it. Yeah.
Yep. And he's like pretty casual. And he's like, oh, I gotta go. I gotta leave it at exactly 4 o'clock. You're like, well, what is that? Why did you leave it? He's like, we gotta go. Or she goes back to this other person. She drops the act immediately at 4 o'clock. Yeah, I could still say fake.
All right. So we've debunked and proven some Friar myths here. I think that's enough time dedicated to Nick Friar on this podcast.
I thought there was going to be something like, is one of the DSU members not real? Like, just a figment of our imagination.
I'd put my money on Shime of anybody, but...
No, Shime's, I would say Goo, because his life seems so surreal. Like, he just... Goo seems like he was not a real person. He's a caricature, and I love every second of it. But I've seen him, and I've touched him, so it gets strange. Anywho, now speaking about conspiracy theories, now there is a... No, I wouldn't say a million. There is at least tens of conspiracy theories when it comes to wrestling. I narrowed it down to 5 today just for the topic of conversation. We can see how far we go with them. We can always do a volume 2 in the future. But these were 5 I kind of picked out, 4 being like more we could kind of spread this some time. There's some things that have happened. And then 1 is new. And that's for just like the majority of some of our wrestling fans that listen to the podcast. Some are still up to date. Some are really more in the nostalgia. So basically you have like 4 nostalgia, if you will. 1 very dark. And then 1 of the new variety. So we will start with probably the biggest conspiracy in like the on television wrestling of all time. That is, was the Montreal Screwjob a work? When you hear that, before we get into like what happened, all that, Billy, when you hear Montreal Screwjob, it's now been what, 20, almost 25 years coming up. Do you think it was a work?
So there was a time in my life where I kind of considered it because this was at the height of the Monday Night Wars. This was, you know, what, 1998,
right? No, it was
97. So I would, it was like when it was about to kick off.
Yeah, this is right. Like the Monday Night Wars, I think height was 96 because WCW like planted a flag, NWO. Mm. They kind of took over the momentum. 98 is when I actually think like the competitive like ratings were going back and forth. Obviously, this is 97 throughout the 83 weeks where WCW was in the lead.
Yeah, so I never really believed it because, and we'll get to this in a later one, Bret Hart is such an asshole. A pompous like paint, like he's just such a dickhead that I believe that he wouldn't give up the belt. Like when the whole thing comes out, like don't let him pin you, don't let him put you in a submission. You know, you've been in this company forever, you think you know everything about wrestling, and the tradition is if you're going to leave the company, and he is leaving the company, you go out looking at the lights and you give the belt back. He wanted to do some cockamamie thing where he like hands it over the next night on Raw. That's not how it's done. So I believe that this is real, but there's a lot of little breadcrumbs that you could pull the conspiracy out of.
Yeah, I understand why the question is asked, but I say no chance. And the main reason I say that is there's no way they were this smart enough to come up with the character of Mr. McMahon. There's no way. He was the greatest villain, and he ended up being the greatest villain of all time. And it didn't happen the next day, but it slowly morphed into that. And I don't think that they could have predicted it to go this way. They couldn't have scripted it this way. They've told some really good stories in the past, but I think we kind of complain about more of their storytelling. And this ended up being perfect. And then it added to the lore of the 90s WWF and the fact that it popped up in, was it the Beyond the Mat documentary? Mm-hmm. I know that wasn't their thing. They kind of snuffed it out, but just all that stuff kind of built to it. And no, because if they tried to write a screw job, it would have been worse than it was.
Yeah, little Tony Reale here, Stat Boy. So Wrestling with Shadows is the document. Yes, the document. And Billy, what you're talking about was Bret Hart has spoken to this. Bruce Pritchard has spoken on it. He didn't want to just hand over the belt. He said he would have lost it either the following night or the next week. He was just so pissed off. So the story goes, Bret Hart gets screwed over in Montreal, hence the name, at Survivor Series 1997, as he wanted to drop the belt. He would have even still lost it to Shawn, allegedly, but then that became persona non grata. He wanted no part in losing this belt to Shawn Michaels because Shawn Michaels has made his life a living hell. The two of them genuinely hated each other, and there's evidence of that from a fight to just backstage situations to Shawn Michaels calling out Bret Hart's potential, like, having an affair with someone that he did not do. And Sonny, throughout, just in case you're wondering, he alleged he had Sonny days. Sonny has said she's had sex with like 700 people. She promised she didn't have sex with Bret Hart, unless for some reason she's holding out on that.
Including Shawn Michaels.
She had a full-on relationship with Shawn Michaels while married to Chris Candido, which is a terribly sad story. And with all that the two of them hate each other. Then when it came to Montreal, basically they tried to make peace. Bret said, listen to Shawn, like, let's work this out. And Shawn basically said, I would never put you over. And that's when Bret was like, yeah, this.
When you asked the question,
to Keith's point, I think is like one of the stronger ones. Like, it's stranger than fiction, right? Like, genius happened for them in the moment here because I don't think they could run into this any other way, right?
And to go where Keith kind of said, like, Vince McMahon came out not the next night, the following Monday, because stories started to break, like, on real news cycles. And he basically did the whole Bret screwed Bret, and Vince tried to, like, babyface it, like, we're the victims as the WWF at the time, and people took it the other way. Like, Vince sounds like a pompous piece of crap, and that's what slowly put that into motion over the following few months. That's when Stone Cold made his rise, and he was anti-authority. Originally was Degeneration X, and then if you watch those episodes back, Vince McMahon was doing interviews, and he would call out Vince McMahon, Stone Cold, so they kind of broke fourth wall, and everything kind of stumbled from there. But this was definitely the moment that, like, broke a lot of, like, storyline in real life.
And so plus, they would have had that punch on camera.
Right, I agree with you on that. And for those who think that the screw job was a work, are they suggesting that Bret Hart was in on it?
So here's the reason, at all. Yes, here's where the theory or the evidence of it is. Bret Hart signed a 10-year, I want to say it was, contract with WWE to make like $2 million a year.
I thought it was a lifetime contract.
No, it was 10 years, basically. Sure. 10 year. Yeah, it's a 10-year contract. There's like paperwork in his books. And the theory was then at, I think it was a Madison Square Garden show, Vince said, I can't afford you anymore. Go back to WCW and try to work out a deal. Which is insane when you think about it. Like, you just signed this guy to 10 years. Like, we'll take it to a Patriots. Like, Bledsoe signed a 10-year deal in 2000 or 2001, that offseason. And then kind of similar weird thing happened to him less than a year later, but in a much different circumstance in real life and business. So he basically tells him, go get paid by the competition. I can't afford you anymore. If you can get your contract, go do it. So people are kind of saying that maybe Bret and Vince kind of work this out to give Bret buzz on the way out and get like his character started. WCW completely, that's a story for another time. They completely dropped the ball on Bret Hart. Debuts as a freaking special guest referee. Like, what are we doing? And for an Eric Bischoff, Larry Zbysko match, that was in a very fumbled 1997 Starrcade. And then you have Vince and them taking their ball. So the theory is basically like, Bret said, all right, I'll do this. Let's get this all worked out. Let's do some like work. And my even best guess at this point, I think Bret knew something was going to happen. I just don't think he thought that was going to happen. I don't think he thought that they would put him in the sharpshooter, ring the bell. I think he knew something weird and would happen, but I don't think he thought that. And I think that's what kind of worked them into the position, whether he got punched Vince or not.
And my last thing on this, and my favorite part about it, if it is 100% real, when you watch Vince McMahon ask to ring the bell, you see the psycho lunatic that is a real person, because he's like, ring the bell. He, like, he goes nuts. And like, if that's 100% not a work, he is like unhinged.
Yeah. And I also think Bret Hart, his face in the ring and then him spitting on Vince couldn't have been any, like, again, if that was really a work, they wouldn't have been able to do it as well. Like, he would have kind of stumbled around it. He wouldn't have been able to show it the way that he did. And then again, if you go to the Wrestling with Shadows documentary and you see some of the chaos backstage and like Undertaker being fired up and like everybody else kind of running around, like asking, Shawn Michaels was so nervous about it. He's like, did you know about this? He's like,
I didn't do a thing.
Like, none of those guys, none of them are good enough actors to have pulled this off if it was fake.
No. And that's the thing. Well, at the time,
maybe The Rock.
Yeah, you can see how bad. Well, The Rock, luckily not involved. You can see how bad, like, Triple H and Shawn looked in that. Like you said, Keith, like they both just look like caught with their pants down. But that's where a part of it could be like they didn't know when, how. But anyways, either way, I think we can all, like, there's no way it's a 100% work. Like, Bret's not doing that for any. Like, he didn't benefit enough aside from making literally triple the amount of money per year, like stupid money WCW paid him. So that's the only part that I could see, like, where the evidence comes in the other way and just like, hey, almost like, here, have like a star and here's something for Bret to be skyrocketed. And they knew, and Bruce Prichard talked about this, like, WCW had no idea how to handle a pure wrestler.
No, God,
at the top especially, because they had guys like, you know, Guerreros and Jerichos, but they were undercard. They never, their top was Hogan, Savage, you know, Goldberg, Sting. No disrespect to Sting at that point, not who he was in 1989, but yeah. So I think we can kind of put that one in the I don't think so category. Next one, a little more titillating one here, was Randy Savage banned from WWE into WWF into WWE for a relationship with Stephanie McMahon? A little background on this one. The theory goes that Savage and Stephanie had relations, or a relationship, in 1993-94, which led to Macho Man's dismissal from WWF, and he was never mentioned or brought back at all, and he wasn't inducted into the Hall of Fame until 2015, 4 years after his passing. And the story goes he left WWE because he didn't no longer want to be a commentator, and Vince didn't see him as an in-ring competitor. And also that, again, no return through that, you know, with the post-WCW, anything there. And also his former girlfriend, Gorgeous George, who was on WCW television, was quoted once saying that Randy explained the whole situation to her, that yes, things happened, but they both know what happened. But Randy was on ecstasy when he told this story.
So, yeah, I mean, this one, I think, has some legs to it just because there's enough smoke and fire here. It is kind of like really strange because Stephanie is, I think, 45 years old right now. And this happened, what, some 20 years ago, right?
Mm-hmm. So that would make this would have been 30 years ago.
30 years ago. Wow, I'm bad at math. Okay, so she would have been real young.
So she like was
17?
Yeah, so the big rumor on the internet was she was 14, but in 1993, she would have been 17 years old.
Okay, so I guess depending on the state.
17, 18.
But like, it's not a pleasant thing to think about in either way. But I think Vince McMahon holds a grudge. So it's either one of those things where he did something else and Vince said this happened instead, or this might have really happened.
Yeah, I just feel like something had to be the reason why Macho Man wasn't in the Hall of Fame. Because we know that they let everybody back in and they all come back to work for him, for God's sakes. You hear all those Ultimate Warrior stories and everything else. And Vince opens the door up to everybody. And Macho Man was the second most popular wrestler of the 80s, second or third. Like, he's on a short list anyway of like the most impactful wrestlers ever. Had the mainstream crossover into a couple of movies, obviously the Slim Jim commercials. So the fact that he wasn't in the Hall of Fame, something had to be up. And this is one of the first conspiracy theories I remember hearing like so long ago, because you would hear all these different jackasses getting into the Hall of Fame and you're like, Macho Man's not in? Like, what are we doing? And like, it just was so strange. And then there was like a little bit of smoke about this one. I forget if somebody on the bus told me or what, but somebody said this one and you're like, oh, like that's just kind of crazy enough to make sense as to why this guy, as popular as he was, got banned. Because everybody left to WCW. Everybody left. Like, he forgave those guys. They all came back, and it was like a whole thing. So I kind of think there has to be something to this.
Yeah, so this was one I want to say was like, yeah, like Keith said, it was like the schoolyard rumors, like somebody's first, like when the internet was first happening, like, or when it got to the next level in like the early 2000s, that's when this one started to spread. And this one seems the most believable to me because of all of what we said. Like, he wasn't like the reason he wasn't in the ring anymore. Vince did put out, like, because WCW was kind of, you know, signing older guys, was taking, took, you know, Hogan, and they wanted to make this like clean slate. Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels pushed that. And, you know, they had Yokozuna to, you know, they were trying to look for a new look and feel. But what is the one thing we know about WWE? They're all about money. And Macho Man, not just, you know, the figures they could sell, the merchandise. If they put him in the Hall of Fame in 2006 or 2000, you know, if he was there, like, they would have made a ton of money. Imagine a last Macho Man match in like 2007, whether it was good or not. Like, they left a lot of money on the table. So there's something here. And the fact that Stephanie and Macho Man never once spoke on it and had been questioned about it and just like no commented it. And there's one interview, and I don't believe it's Howard Stern, because, oh, who knows with him now or even then, but like, Stephanie was asked in an interview and they asked to edit it out of any like replay. I mean, so something's there, because she basically said something like, I don't know what you're talking about and I don't answer that question or something like that. Like, and it's almost like, what? Why wouldn't you just say no? Like,
yeah.
So there's something there. And have to look.
I mean, they let Coco Beware in the Hall of Fame before Macho Man.
Because so like, everyone's got those Coco Beware shirts and they're Frankie. The
I do love Frankie.
Yeah. So this one seems the most, I think this one is real. Like, this one seems
There's something there.
Yeah. If we were to stamp it like closer to true than not, this would definitely be one, because he's not only one of the biggest wrestlers of the time, he's one of the most recognizable wrestlers ever. Like, if you ask like a person on the street, you know, name your favorite or your most recognizable wrestler, it might be Macho Man. And like, I think he could have been even more recognizable because, you know, Hogan got new life, Nash, Hall, all of them, when they came back to WWE for a stint. And he, like you guys all said, he was the only one who didn't. And besides Hogan, he was the most popular out of any of them.
I always thought it was weird too, Rossi, that he was just deemed too old. And so rather than having him like put wrestlers over in the early 90s, they're like, oh, you're a commentator now. It's like, what a mismanagement. Like,
yeah,
he went on, not that he had this amazing WCW career, but he had a bunch of matches and he was like a big part of all kinds of different factions and things. Like, what a weird way to really bury him there.
So one story, and Bret Hart's talked about, is go back to Bret. Like, that was originally going to be the WrestleMania 10 once in, like, it was going to be Bret and Macho, because that's how you kind of like transfer, right? Like, yeah. Macho has the belt, then Bret beats him for it. Like, wins a Rumble, then beats him. But they went through that whole like him and Lex go over at the same time, keeping Yoko on top, like this big unbeatable heel. But like, Macho should have, or even at the Royal Rumble, there was a story that it could have been, you know, him, even Yokozuna beating him. But like, he never was put in that position. And again, this is in 1993. In 1998, he's in championship matches and champions for WCW.
He should have fought. 5 years ago. He should have had a series of matches with Bret Hart. He should have had a series of matches with Shawn Michaels that all would have been like classics, even like Tatanka. Like, you put that guy down in the mid card,
Razor
in
Ramon. That
era, Razor Ramon. Yeah. Like, those will all would have been, and he never really faced those guys. I only really remember him facing like Hogan and stuff. And like Ric Flair.
Runs, and then, I was going to say he had the matches with Flair, Warrior, and then WrestleMania 9. I can't remember now. I know he was.
Yeah,
that was the outdoor one, right?
He had also a Warrior. I think he had
commentary.
He had a Dusty Rhodes badge.
So he didn't night nine. And then 10, he fought Crush in that random like Falls Count Anywhere match where he like pinned somebody and then had to like get back to the ring, which is bizarre. But that memorable. But imagine that against, again, any of the wrestlers we just mentioned or somewhere else on the card. Didn't do anything for Crush. But yeah, very strange. Very strange. Something's there. And you know what? Good for him, I guess. As long as it was legal. We'll go with 18. And good for her. What a stud. Macho Man. He likes to plan out his matches. I can only imagine him in the bedroom.
At like WrestleMania 4. At WrestleMania 4, that was the tournament, right?
Yeah.
So he fought Butch Reed, then Greg the Hammer Valentine, and then One Man Gang, and then Ted DiBiase.
One of the hardest watches of all time is WrestleMania 4. People don't talk about it.
Matches.
There's like 9,000 matches. It's fast and furious, and most of them are not entertaining. Like,
it's so funny when you like think about like all of his great matches in the WWE. He doesn't really have any, but the one time they put him in there with a guy his equivalent, Steamboat, it's considered like one of the greatest matches of all time. So we should have seen him against the likes of that star studded like inner colleague, Mr. Perfect, and him would have been magic.
Oh, absolutely, Lords of London though. All right, so our next theory is our current wrestling theory. That is one we've bantied about a little bit on Twitter, but that is the CM Punk, Young Bucks, Kenny Omega, we could add Tony Khan, Colt Cabana, AEW situation a work. Little quick background on this one. The theory is that CM Punk had planned out his rant on Hangman Page and the EVPs to create an anti-authority character dash heel, which made him popular back when WWE, a little over a decade ago now, and AEW has been down in popularity and buzz and since, you know, Triple H has taken over, but Punk went in too far on the Colt Cabana stuff and actually may have worked himself into a shoot with the boys. There's evidence and stories of backstage brawl. Well, one side says they stormed into CM Punk's locker room. CM Punk didn't want to give him the time of day. People are biting and throwing chairs at each other. And then Dave Meltzer, who is a known close friend of Kenny Omega, says Kenny Omega went in there after the Bucks did just to help the dog, to help Larry the dog, CM Punk's dog. So Keith, they're working on your heartstrings there.
Yeah.
And so basically CM Punk earlier in the week had told he did some interviews and press for All Out, saying that you want to check out the scrum because he says he's going to let it all out at the scrum like prior. So it's like some people and people believe that Tony Khan knew that's why he sat there a certain while. Like if you watched any of this, which was amazing to watch still up on YouTube, is like Tony Khan's just kind of staring there, is a little offended by certain things, but also kind of just like bopping his head along to most of the stuff CM Punk's going off about while eating his like, you know, desserts, his treats. And so the theory is that like, Tony Khan knew, everybody knew, but he went so deep in on the Colt Cabana stuff and then started saying some pretty rather disgraceful things without saying names of EVP. So it's like, all right, we can see where this is going. There was recently a work shoot where Punk came out and basically called out Hangman Page knowing he wasn't there. So like, there's all these theories, like maybe they're trying to build to the future. Maybe they're trying to build up some buzz, but something went awry. So do you believe this is real? Because now they're all allegedly suspended. There's a lawsuit being drawn up, or is this just them trying to put together a really long, hectic storyline and work something out?
I'm going to go with the Bret Hart scenario here, where CM Punk is an asshole. Like, I like him as a wrestler. I think he's entertaining, or at least was. But he's a giant child. Like, this seems to follow him wherever he goes. Like, every time CM Punk shows up in a locker room, he dates all the women or he gets into a fight, and I think that he is just full of himself. He thinks he's the smartest guy in the room. And basically all of the guys he's messing with are the guys who kind of helped found this company as well. So he's just a child. Like, I think when he says, you know, I'm working with children, like, you're the biggest baby of them all. And I would love to see him and Kenny Omega in a real fight.
Yeah, I would too, first of all. And I just think that with Punk, it's funny, all the old promos that they used to play of Punk and people would go crazy on him on Twitter. And now they're putting all the old promos of Triple H and John Cena talking back to Punk and being like, oh shit, those guys were actually telling the truth back then. And I think that's what it is. So like, if it all this is a work, I could see the idea of CM Punk by himself, which I think is the whole issue here, is I don't think he works well with others. And so maybe he, even a part of him thinks this is a good idea for the long run. This is a good idea for storytelling. He didn't let anybody else know. Nobody else was able to really respond in a certain way. There's no way in hell Tony Khan really knew what he was saying. You can see by his darting eyes and everything else. Tony Khan was clueless about the whole thing. And I think one of the lines of honor, I wouldn't be surprised if Punk prepared most of his stuff, because I watched that whole half hour press conference and the first question had nothing to do with what he answered. And it was just like, okay, wait, before you guys go, here's 10 minutes of stuff that I've been preparing. But then later on, as he's slugging spindrifts and eating cupcakes, he's like, I'm old, I'm hurt, and I'm tired. I think those three things are true. And I think that just, he kind of like lost it there. And he's got to be a little frustrated, because even though I know they've had a couple of, you know, good pay-per-views and a couple of good showings in the ratings, 5 years of CM Punk chants in the building, after 5 minutes, it felt like the steam kind of wore off. And I think he has to be feeling that a little bit. And I think now he's lashing out at everybody else that he's working with.
There is some smoke, I think, to your fire there. Also, he tore his like pec or tore his during the match. So that was another thing that came into play. Like, maybe he was just like, I know I'm out, so I'm just going to let this, because like his two title wins, he got hurt. Like, he beat Hangman Page a few months back, gets hurt like with his foot. And now his tricep, and he's going to be out for at least a year. And now it's like, is he worth the price? And like the thing with CM Punk too, and this is the unfortunate side, whether you're a fan or not, like he has been fighting like pundits, if you will, like the Eric Bischoffs who say like, he's not worth it. And he hasn't done jack for them. And like all these people. And like you said, now these Triple H and John Cena promos, all the other side of the CM Punk promos, like it's make CM Punk a star. It's only good if CM Punk's on top. And you look at that and you're like, holy crap. And you know, the one person with the biggest smile on his face is Triple H, because they both hated each other. As you hear from the story in the podcast, the famous Colt Cabana podcast, where CM Punk said like Triple H is in there, and Vince's like, you're going to beat Triple H at WrestleMania. He's like, I don't have to beat you. You didn't put me over when you should have and all that. And Triple H is just like this, like, oh, and he had this smug look on his face, basically thinking like, F you, buddy. Which yeah. CM Punk had some correct notions of, yes, he should have been over in 2011. But now we fast forward again 11 years, and yeah, something's up with him. And I think what is happening, at least internet-wise, is not that I have my finger on the pulse all the time, because it is a sketchy little place with wrestling fans, but like the shift has happened to WWE being like worthy again of like your time, and like, wow, look at their creativeness. Wow, look, they're letting Kevin Owens talk. Oh, wow, this guy's compelling now. And like, okay, Finn Balor, like the everything about it, like the show is, even if you don't watch all 3 hours of Raw, you could. It's not, you don't have to, but you could. Where before it was literally like, what are we watching with these two? Who cares?
Well, and I think real wrestling fans are going back to WWE. Not that they left, they always had better numbers, but like the quote unquote like indie fans that wanted to see the great matches, because all the guys in AEW seem like they're getting hurt. And then over in WWE, they're actually allowing them to have good matches. And you're like, oh, wait a minute, like Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins and Riddle and all these guys. And the Usos, like, they are actually, these guys are the best wrestlers in the world, and they're letting them put on matches now. And AEW doesn't tell any stories. I try to tune in over there. There's nothing there. It's just like, oh, we have this cool guy from New Japan, he's gonna wrestle. You're like, okay, and then what? Ooh. Well, then like, nothing. What? Then he goes home, and then we keep going, and then they're going nowhere. The other reason why I say this is unlikely to be a work is they had just crowned CM Punk champion and the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega, their new stupid ass trios champions. Yeah. And then the very next night, they're like, we're taking all the belts away. I'm like, that just looks so bad if that was really your plan.
Yeah, that, and yes, that's, well, this is where I think the theory comes in, that it was originally a plan. Then did things go too far? Like, CM Punk planned it, but did CM Punk work himself into a shoot? And then did the Young Bucks and Kenny take too much offense to it? Because really, and the weirdest thing, it's like, might as well put Colt Cabana on a pole and get Vince Russo to book this, because this Colt Cabana, with all due respect, is a big nothing. It's a big nothing. The guy doesn't move any needles. The guy doesn't really matter. Yes, he was really cool. He revolutionized wrestling because he was the first to do a podcast talking to wrestlers, which was awesome in like 2007. And that's amazing. No disrespect to him, but this is somebody that we're fighting over that means nothing. And you have your world champion going off on him. You have all these other guys allegedly defending him because they believe CM Punk comes in the company, Colts off TV. So freaking what?
Like, yeah, I mean, go listen. If nobody's ever heard the Colt Cabana CM Punk podcast, it is a 90-minute love letter to CM Punk from himself. And
two 90-minute love letters. It ruined the Thanksgiving for me because I literally said I need to listen to this one Thanksgiving after we, Billy, played like football. And I'll never forget because I was like, I'm listening to this entire thing. I'm showing up after.
It's like reading the Bret Hart book and you're like, wow, this guy's just fucking full of himself.
If you crap on Bret Hart one more time, it's going to be conspiracy there when I put my boot up your ass.
But either way, I do like the theory that this could be CM Punk being like, I'm going to do a shoot and hope to get a work out of it. Like, I'm going to piss these guys off to get a payday because even if I piss them off, eventually they're going to have to make this a match. And then it went too far. And then like his trainer bit somebody,
which I think is the best part. Steel story. That's amazing. That's the best part. This Ace Steel, who again, to Keith's point, I think we talked about this when we played Mario Kart recently off air, is like, AEW, going back to you talking about no storylines, like literally I've been to 3 AEW events this year and like some of them, like you see them plotting, but this, like the recent one, like John Moxley's your interim champion. You have no challenger. They bring out Chris Jericho challenge. I'm like, oh, there's your pay-per-view match. Here's 4 weeks of build. They do that match in 2 weeks. Then CM Punk comes back. You do that match before the pay-per-view. He loses. And then you do it again 8 days later. And this Ace Steel guy cuts an awesome promo. But who's Ace Steel? Why am I watching this?
Nobody knows. And they're trying to, as a person that can just watch the free TV, I appreciate them putting on crazy matches. But it just doesn't seem like that's the way to do it. Like, that's a very much actually, another good meme I saw, which I completely agree with, was, you know, 2 years ago, people being like, oh, this reminds me of WCW, talking about AEW. And then now it's like, oh, this reminds me of WCW. Yeah,
exactly.
There's a great meme of when Bischoff and Russo are in the ring because they stripped all, one day they did a hard reset in 2000, took all the belts off of everybody. And like, that's where Booker T became a champ. Like they just like reset everything. And that's literally what AEW somewhat doing is they take a new trios belt, which again, absolutely unnecessary for, you have 3 hours of television and you have not only tag champs, we have trios tag champs. Like,
it's so stupid. And like FTR is like the greatest tag team and having the best year in wrestling. And they haven't had a shot at the AEW tag titles ever. Like, it's just, that's
the longest time. No, it is. And that's like another thing that like their roster is so deep, but yet they use your top 5% all the time. Sprinkle in the other guys instead of always having the other guys be like the highlights.
So two quick things. Who do you think should be champion right now? Who do you think it makes the most sense to carry AEW?
So to carry AEW, if I'm going to be like honest, like it's Jon Moxley. Jon Moxley is the guy. He's had the best year. If the year ends today, he's the wrestler of the year. He's put on the most compelling matches and stories, and FTR is right behind him. If you want to be, if you want the new face, and I actually don't even know, I didn't watch Rampage last week. The only other thing I could see, if like you need big names, like I hate to, I know people don't like Bryan Danielson. I could understand Jericho, but like those two make sense. But then do you want to like get Darby Allin? Do you want to put like this new face guy that's like totally fresh, totally out of the box? Can't believe. What's that?
Like, when I look at AEW, the night that we went and we saw, actually, I might have went with the Jobber Knock crew. No, that was the FTR match, which was ridiculous. But like the card around that was not good. Like it was like they didn't have a lot of their people there that night. And it's like, and Boston's a big wrestling town, bring the people. But the first AEW show I went to, I walked out of there for the first time seeing Kenny Omega live. I walked out. Kenny Omega wrestled only in a dark match and cut a promo. And I walked out of there being like, this guy is a legitimate, like, not even just a wrestling star, just like the most charismatic dude on the mic, in the ring, total stud. And that's what got me into like New Japan, was the lore of this out of this world wrestler that you couldn't believe wasn't in the WWE. And like, I don't see him enough. He's like the he's like, if you were to build a wrestler. And like we say Randy Orton, but Randy Orton lacks in certain things. But if you were to build like the perfect guy to like throw in any era, it's Kenny Omega. He can do everything.
Yeah, I think to really quickly to build, and then we'll recap to Keith's point, is that Kenny Omega was that guy in New Japan. He cut these like endearing promos. Women loved him, all stuff. And then they changed his character in AEW for some reason and overexposed him and then became a bad guy. It was really strange. But like, obviously he would be one. And like the only other like person that like comes to mind, if it's like, all right, we're going to like strap the rocket. Like if you got to go with like either a fresh face, like, I don't know if you go back to like a Hangman Page, those guys, but I still think it's John. Like, I think John Moxley has the aura, has the WWE cred, which I know people don't like to hear that, but like that helps a lot, especially in this time. And he's just like rugged. He cuts amazing promos. He loves that company. Like, this is his saving grace.
So
but that's what do you think?
The one thing you said too about Hangman, and just to sort of go back to this, the whole idea of, is this whole thing a work? They kind of were already going down that road with Punk and Hangman, right? Mm-hmm. Like you said, Hangman called him out, and everybody's replaying that promo. Great promo. Right in his face, by the way, which I give him more credit for than the bullshit where you're like in the ring and you know the guy's not there. But then that got such enough like discussion around it. You could have kept working with that. And you could have had CM Punk Moxley. You could have had Hangman fighting somebody else. But then those two guys always kind of sniping at each other. And then you're like, wait, is this real? Is this not real? And they could have just used that alone. And probably ended in Punk retaining, because I think, I don't know about Hangman Page, to be honest. And then that's when Kenny Omega or my guy Adam Cole, when he gets healthy, or like somebody like that sort of steps in and can get on the top tier. Dude, Cole's the man. Just gotta get healthy. Chugs.
All I will say about Adam Cole, I will defend. I just don't like the body shaming for absolutely no reason.
It's like a hike, just body shaming.
Cut the crap.
Fat slobs, goddamn.
And if you are a CM Punk hater, you must love Bobby Fish, who is absolutely out for blood. Telling him he's calling like a C word on like, I don't know who he interviewed with. It was in Boston. It was NBC Boston. That's all they keep getting quoted. But Bobby Fish really wants to kill Punk because in a match here in Boston, he basically Fish kicked out at like 3.1, and I guess Punk went ballistic on him backstage. So
yeah, he did, and I kind of understand why Punk did. Although Punk also he hit the finisher on him, and then he crawled over super slow, and then
that's the thing.
So it's kind of tricky. Like, and then Fish kicked out, like almost kicked out of his finisher. So I see why Punk yelled at him, but Bobby Fish also just hates Punk because he's like, Punk portrays himself as like an MMA guy, and he's like, he has the worst like high kicks in the game, and he's like,
it's
so mad about it. Yeah.
Also, the worst elbow drop in the history of wrestling.
Oh, come on!
And if you're gonna, if you're gonna wear the Macho Man tights with the stars on it, deliver like the, who was it? Was it Kairi Sane or no?
She has the crazy bend though. That's like,
but even I don't still, know like give me like Shawn Michaels had one of the greatest elbow drops of all time. Like, if you're gonna wear the Macho Man tights. It looks like he's just
technically the stars for Chicago, but I know what you're saying.
He sucks. He's an asshole. I hate him.
All right, put him in the Billy Hate category. Here's the real thing. To go back to this all, 7 years, as Keith was talking about, we wanted this guy back. He's back for 1 year, and it's already spoiled. And there's a good chance we never see him in major wrestling promotion ever again or wrestle again.
Good riddance. I never wanted him back. After that,
We had a podcast. There's a podcast about us banting about how it would be good to have
him. I wanted him back. I was just pissed that it was like, the surprise was taken away. It was like anytime they cast somebody to be in a movie, like you know that they're going to be in it, and like that wasn't a surprise. It was still cool. It was a cool moment, but it would have been crazy if you're just sitting there watching and he came out.
This was the No Way Home of like, you knew, everybody knew this was going to happen. But then when it happened, it was cool.
Yeah, guess what? Toby Maguire is like CM Punk. They're both assholes.
Whoa! We're taking a shot to Toby Maguire.
That's well known, I think.
Yeah, but that's okay. That's okay. Still did his job. And now, real quick on this one last one, the one I was going to put in, and this could be for a future, there was one I just found while doing research for this, was there was a theory that that the 2013, when Punk left WWE the night after the Royal Rumble, that was a work as well to kind of rekindle that, like, him, like, remember how like he didn't leave in 2011, like, I'm walking out with this, blew the kiss, and was back in 8 days and won the title. Like, they were almost going to rekindle that, but again, him with Triple H, like, there was this story that basically once it got to a next level, they started like, really, there's some stories out there that like they communicated, Vince communicated with CM Punk, Triple H apologized to CM Punk, but like they were all going to do something that was going to be this huge thing at WrestleMania 30 where he like came back. But
I feel like Punk would have mentioned that by now.
He
would have been, because he got so pissed, and obviously he was out of the business for so long that he would have told, whether it was the Colt Cabana podcast or doing press for like a couple of the movies that he did or something, it would have come out. But I don't know.
He's one or two more wrestling organizations for being the Antonio Brown of fucking wrestling.
He might be, Bill. I think he's there. Because technically, he has put some dampers on some major plans. And that movie he did, I thought wasn't bad. Was that Lady on the Third Floor?
Yeah, something like that. It was all right.
Something like that. Not bad. All right, now we'll get to our next one. This one is very fascinating, I think. The two Ultimate Warriors theory. The theory is when the Ultimate Warrior returned at WrestleMania 8 after Papa Shango missed his cue, which is still one of the most hilarious things in wrestling. When Sid Vicious had to kick out, I think to this day, well, until that point, he was the only one that kicked out of the leg drop at WrestleMania, of all things. And the Ultimate Warrior then came out to save the day and hadn't been seen since SummerSlam the previous year, looking a lot leaner, looking a little bit slimmer, and also just looked different. And people believe that he was being portrayed by Kerry Von Erich, who was known as the Texas Tornado, famously lost a foot. The Von Erichs are a whole nother, there's a whole bunch of conspiracy theories about them, or Jim Powers, who had a similar look to the Warrior in the early 90s. The theory goes that after the Warrior wrote a letter to Vince in mid-1990, basically saying, like, I want a bunch of money. He wanted a big payday. He got his payday at SummerSlam of 91. Then got basically told, you're out, got released. But the popularity of the Warrior to sell figures and all the things, how WWE made money in the early 90s, like, well, we own the copyright to the character. Let's put this person in. If you look at it, if you look at what he looked like and the return of 19 WrestleMania 8, and you see what Kerry Von Erich looked like, who, by the way, hadn't been seen since the Royal Rumble of that year, just mysteriously off television, you put two and two together, was there two Ultimate Warriors?
I mean, I loved this one. And I mentioned earlier the Randy Macho Man Savage one was one of the first. This was actually the first conspiracy theory I remember hearing, was like somebody saying that Ultimate Warrior is back. And then they're like, but it's not really Ultimate Warrior. Like somebody said, somebody else's like older brother's like, it's not really Ultimate Warrior.
He's dead. That was a big thing. Ultimate Warrior died.
Ultimate Warrior died, which again, fast forward. And then eventually that's true. But at the time, he was alive. I like the idea that it was Kerry Von Erich. I really do, but sadly, I think this was Jim Helwig. I think they were both Ultimate Warriors.
At the time, I think his name was Warrior, but I know what you mean
Warrior. Yes,
because he had to change it so he could try to get some money off of his own name.
Yes, because Vince McMahon, there's a letter that Vince McMahon says you'll never be able to use the name the Ultimate Warrior, and he's like, guess what? Mm-hmm. I'm gonna change my name to Warrior.
Warrior, officially.
Yes, which was no joke because I met the man and did something, did like a phone. We used to do like a playlist thing where like sometimes celebrities, but most of the time it was listeners would do playlists, and we did it. And I'll never forget having to call him and him like be like answering the phone. Hello, this is Warrior.
Hey,
like
Warrior.
Like hey, like it's just bizarre. But Warrior, Bill, what are your thoughts on this one?
I watched a few videos on this one because this was the one that I remember probably the most, but knew the least about. I didn't even know that it was, you know, supposedly the Texas Tornado, who also tragically passed away early in his life, too. But and the other guy didn't even look close. Like that guy, what was it, Jim Powers? That wasn't even close. But there was some really ridiculous reasons people came up with on the internet for why he wasn't there. One was he was wrestling Yokozuna and all of his like his chest exploded. And like he wound up with like the Kofi chest or something. There was like he died from steroid overdoses and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, there was an Andre the Giant body slam theory too, right?
Earthquake. I think it was Earthquake.
Or even Earthquake makes sense.
Because one of his last television appearances, he body slammed Earthquake and people like he exploded. Well, I know there's a theory you can look if you just hit Google, like his muscles exploded. That's one thing I think is hilarious.
But yeah, it's one of those things where maybe for that night they found a really good body double. There was like also rumors that they hired like a stripper who looked just like him. And maybe that's why the guy, whoever was waiting for the cue. But I definitely
I hear that's what they do at DraftKings for you when
you just get a male dancer. But it's one of those things where maybe that night, but even when you look real close, his face, even with face paint on, is kind of unmistakable. So I think it was him the whole time, but this is one of the more fun ones, at least.
My belief is that was Kerry Von Erich at WrestleMania 8, and that's what convinced Warrior to come back. Like, look what we can do without you.
Ooh.
Why don't you come back? Because like later that year, SummerSlam, if you look at like, he clearly, the real Ultimate Warrior was back later because the voice, once he cut promos and just, he visually looked different less than a few months later at, I think they did like a Saturday night's main event then SummerSlam of the following year. Like, I truly believe now, like thinking about it and doing my time research on this, I think they brought Kerry Von Erich, said, this is how we're going to get him back. Gave him a nice little fat payday to come out. Because don't forget, he only showed up there at WrestleMania 8 for like 4 minutes of television time. Like,
although
in the face paint, totally different. Like the face struck. I don't know. I think that's what they did. It was a boy.
He also famously, when he came back to WWF and he was in a feud with Jerry Lawler, came out to the ring wearing a hat, which he never ever wore a hat before. And they were just like, what are you doing? And he had like his hair up in the hat. And you're just like, dude, what are you doing? Like you have greatest, such an iconic image.
When
so this, I'm going to throw it up right now. This is, for those of you who can't see, this is WrestleMania 8.
That's Kerry Von Erich. Look at the hair. Look at the hair. He never had that kind of like poof to his hair. His hair was just long and down.
It does look a little bit like Kerry Von Erich.
I love that. I'm telling you, they did that and said, look what we're about to do. Get your ass back here.
We need to check his foot, though. We need to pan down and check his foot.
Can someone stab it like Mr. Deeds?
I mean, I don't know if we want to get into this right now, but I would say the best way to check is probably the nips. To be like, just like flat out honest, if we have to like do it.
Puffy nips. Puffy nips is a big sign of the steroids, right?
I mean, no, I think everyone's probably like a snowflake. If I'm, mine.
Let's take a look at the nips. Pull the nips up.
Here we go. Everybody, let's take a look at the nips. But back to the hat when that happened in '96. That's one of the best. Like when Pritchard's podcast was like before he came back to WWE and all that. Like that story is one of my favorites because he's basically like they're gonna break a like painting over your head, and he's like, oh no, I'm gonna bleed. He's like, no, we're gonna do the back of it actually. So like the glass will pop backwards. It will be a better visual. And he didn't trust anybody. So he put on a goddamn baseball cap. Like, what are we doing? Like, it is one of the most ridiculous things. His return in 96 is probably one of the worst, most unnecessary returns ever. Like, did nothing.
So there was also, I saw an article. I didn't see the interview, but the Godfather, Papa Shango. Yeah. No, please.
Yeah, I think... Look at the hair too. Like it's poofy. Imagine that dry. That's wet hair.
I mean, also like, look at like the pec shape, like right at the corner. Yeah.
I'm telling you.
I think we're on to
something. I don't know though. I think the mouth is a little different though. The nips might line up. Look at that mouth. Look at this mouth coming up. Anything's a little different.
That one's closed. If he does a little like, that one's sucking a popsicle.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to have to pull up the Peacock and watch WrestleMania 8 again. But apparently.
Good luck finding it.
Seriously.
Season 7, episode 1.
Yeah, right. What season am I looking for? The Godfather said he wasn't supposed to work with Psycho Sid because Psycho Sid refused to lose to Ultimate Warrior, apparently. That's what he says here. This is a quote from the Godfather. I was never supposed to work with Sid. Sid was supposed to work with the Warrior, and then Sid didn't want to do the job for him, so Sid took off. And then this is exactly what happened. They were building me as Papa Shango, and this is exactly what happened. This is what people in the office have said. They're in the meeting, and they said, what are we going to do? And Vince says, who's got any steam on them? Only person that got any steam on them right now is Papa Shango. Bam. They never had plans for me to go on Beyond Warrior. That was supposed to be something to do real quick until they got Macho Man ready. Okay. It also sounds like he might be missing some details in there.
Yeah, what a time though. Like, who's got any steam on him? I don't know. The guy that's on Saturdays beating jobbers. Yeah, get him out there. At our main event.
He didn't make the Ultimate Warrior throw up.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, he cursed him. He cursed his ass. So I think this one, we're stamping this one with approval. I don't care. We're putting that one through. That happened. All right, our final one. We're going dark territory here. This one's been bantied about since the Dark Side of the Ring. We don't have to get too much into details because this could be a little bit on the darker side. But was the Chris Benoit murder-suicide a murder cover-up? The story behind this one, if you haven't heard, like Chavo Guerrero is the one who really like kind of makes this most popular. He's been on Jericho's podcast. And if you watch Dark Side of the Ring, he basically says he talked to Chris. He sounded a lot different than he did previously. maybe there's multiple reasons for that, but basically was more paranoid and concerned. He, months prior when he moved to this house or when they eventually moved, like, never gave anybody their address, used a P.O. box for all, like, his WWE checks and everything. And basically Chavo believes that there was someone else in the house when he had spoken to Chris over that weekend when his family, they were all murdered, including Chris, who was hung. And they also talked about, like, the way things were done in Chris Benoit's body, which, again, if you watch The Dark Side of the Ring, they go into more details. But this is a really effed up one in general. When you hear some of the things that are said, there's something about a window, too. And then, obviously, the Wikipedia, if you guys haven't heard that theory, like, during the pay-per-view, again, this involves CM Punk, actually. I think CM Punk won the title that night, the ECW title, in place of Chris Benoit. But there was two updates on Wikipedia, one from Stamford, Connecticut, who, like, the kid basically said, like, once Chris Benoit isn't there, I just always throw out random things on Wikipedia. He's one of those, like, kind of weirdos. And then the other one, which, Billy, I think you used to do that a little bit. Didn't you used to, like, throw random Wikipedia facts out?
I think I changed the dude. Is it James Cameron that did
Terminator?
I forget. But, yeah, I changed somebody's Wikipedia, and now I'm banned for life again. I'm banned from Wikipedia.
Dude, that's another – I knew you've done it. You've done it, and you took a screenshot. It was actually really funny. But, like, this happened during the night, and then there was a follow-up from it, like, later in the evening, and they, like – it was, like, one of those weird servers.
It was, like, kind of accurate. It was 14 hours before his death, and he said Chris Benoit has committed suicide.
Yeah, and then there's another one that said, like, Chris Benoit killed his wife.
Yeah.
During the pay-per-view. That's one – that's, like, the weird one. And that one, like, investigators still haven't, like – they is, like, through – host website that people post through. I don't know, but random stuff was happening, and a lot of people take it that just if people saw one, they're just going to follow it up with another thing to put that back on there. But there's enough little, like, weird things that happen throughout this, and this happens a lot with these situations. But do you, either one of you, have any belief that the Chris Benoit situation was a murder cover-up?
This one is so crazy, it's so dark, it's very sad. And, you know, Jericho, I think, handles it appropriately in The Dark Side of the Ring. He's like, you know, I'm going to talk nicely about this guy, but I'm talking about the guy that I knew. It seemed pretty unbelievable, but, like, he was on, you know, a lot of stuff at the time. The only thing to me that is super sketchy is the Wikipedia posts. Like, that's, to me, that's too coincidental. But even still, like, if this is somehow a cover-up, it is the likes of which we've never seen, because this was one of the first stories ever that kind of played out on live TV in front of us all. Like when, like, the news was breaking, like, people were on Larry King, like, calling into Larry King Live talking about it. You know, the WWE did a salute to him the night after. I think it's too crazy to not be real, but that Wikipedia thing is just out of this world.
So just to clarify, is the theory that some other person
murdered all of them?
So if that's true, which I do not believe it is true, wouldn't the WWE do everything they could to prove that that is the case?
And but what if, like, the WWE did it?
well, I guess if we're going down that road, I guess that's right.
But I'm just saying, like,
so that's what it would have to be, I suppose, because you would think, like, you wouldn't want this. But no, I think sadly, this is just what happened. I didn't think I was going to want to watch The Dark Side of the Ring. It was a two-part thing. I did watch both of those. Listened to Jericho talking about it on his podcast before, too. It's a horrible story. And it's a guy with a million head injuries. And unfortunately, we've heard of a bunch of football players that the same kind of thing has happened with these guys. So, yeah, I don't think there's any kind of cover-up with this one.
Yeah, the thing that, like, I see where people, like, probably also, like, with Chavo specifically, he just lost his uncle, like, a year before. Now this happens. He probably doesn't want to believe these things. So he, maybe the phone calls, the way you relive things, like, we all tell stories from our perspective. So maybe Chris was also making that call. Cause the one thing he said, and that always kind of grabs my heart a little bit, when he says, Chris told him, like, he loved him. And he's like, yeah, I love you too, man. He's trying to get off the phone, cause, like, he missed the flight. And Chris is like, no, Chavo, I need you to know that I love you. And he's like, okay, and he hangs up the phone. Right. That was, like, the last conversation, allegedly, that Chris Benoit ever had, at least with someone over the phone. And so I think probably part of that too, to Chavo's, probably, like, this is really, like, how do I deal with this? Like, and that's where maybe some of that theory came from. And then again, also there was these things where, like, Chris Benoit allegedly, like, owed people money that you can go back to, obviously, like, his relationship with Nancy Benoit, who was originally with Kevin Sullivan, and there were some weird theories about their relationship and how that all broke down. There's a lot of weird stuff. Wrestling is a very bizarre place, but then when like dark stuff happens like this,
oh my god,
people brutal. Just like bandy about it. Like I can only imagine what the locker room thought.
But and you mentioned what Chavo was going through. It seemed like the big takeaway I had from the documentary was just how much the Eddie Guerrero death impacted Chris. Like it kind of like that sent him into like this 2-year spiral and was not going to end well. You never would have in a million years guessed it was going to end like this. But then they kept going back to that relationship with Eddie and how much he missed him and how like things really, really changed after that.
Yeah. And just, yeah, terrible. And it changed the industry too. And don't forget this moment, this is the other weird part. And there were some other conspiracies about like someone out to get WWE going the opposite of Billy, because you have to remember the next night, the original Raw plan was Vince McMahon's funeral, because they just killed off Vince McMahon exploding in a limousine the week before. And so people were thinking something like, how do we ruin? It's all so bizarre in timing. It's just bizarre with that. And this also goes back to a weird theory about that, like just in storyline, because that was never answered. Like Paul London smiling, he gets released a few weeks later because like when Vince McMahon walked by him, he just had a big smile on his face. Like the weirdest stuff happens in wrestling. Yeah, it really
does. I mean, this one, though, is like the darkest moment probably in wrestling history. I mean, the Jake the Snake documentary chilled me to my core, but this is, you know, killing your family and children. So, I mean, to fake this would be even darker. The only, like, maybe I have to chalk up the Wikipedia thing to somebody like me just being a dick messing around, because, like, this is probably the worst. I mean, he's eliminated from all history books, all mentions. I mean, he's just gone from wrestling history. And yeah, I think 100% this happened, but it is one of those, like, I watched the Manti Te'o documentary recently, and there's just like so many crazy coincidences that happen in these things that I think lend themselves to the conspiracy, but I don't think this is one.
No. Yeah, I don't want this to be true. I think this guy clearly had a lot of problems. He's a monster. Listen, and I think we can all be real. Like inside of all of us, some form of rage and anger, certain thing. But like, this is someone who had devastating problems that clearly were never resolved. And to do something like, I can't even wrap my head around the thought of what, like, I sometimes want to throw like, I don't know, like a toy against the wall because I'm angry. I could never think like, oh, I'm going to like drive through my house, or like those things that some crazy people do, or like what Lisa Left Eye Lopez did to Andre Rison, like I'm burning down house. Like, yeah, I don't know how people do that stuff.
The bathroom is dirty enough. Yeah. I don't think on that one.
No, probably not. I think we've gone deep enough on that one. So I think we'll chalk that one up to the guy's just a monster and God rid his soul. And also does not deserve any of the accolades in wrestling. I am all aboard. Like people that still are trying to fight for like Chris Maud deserves, like, no, he doesn't. No, he doesn't.
No. Yeah. Like get out of here. Cause how does that help? First of all, there's not like a real Hall of Fame anyway. It's just like a little fucking thing that
everybody's in it. Snoop Dogg to Donald Trump. It, first like, of all, it's worse than the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Even nothing's worse than that. Even though I believe there's, I don't know if it's Cauliflower Alley or somebody has like a legit, like wrestling, like professional wrestling Hall of Fame. Like he does not deserve any accolades for anything the man did. I'm sorry. It's just, that doesn't work that way.
No,
like it doesn't work that way. So get out of here, get out of town. And there's a great clip if you have the time to check out Paul Heyman talk about this, because somebody says like Chris Maud should be in the Hall of Fame, and he like absolutely goes off.
Fuck him. Yep.
Yeah, basically. And also, New Age Insiders a couple months ago did like a 17-minute like just breakdown of why he shouldn't be in it. And if you have any agreement, like
could have been a minute. Yeah.
Yeah, it could have been 2 minutes. Like you're an asshole if you believe someone who murdered their family and themselves deserves. And this guy also shifted wrestling. Like that's when they changed so much and kind of dipped. Ratings had never been the same since then. That was when they were in four still, and never again have, I think, like maybe one or two Raws have reached a four with like The Rock. Before we just pivot out of this, Keith, what are some of your favorite, so people, we probably should, have been, what are some of your favorite conspiracy theories?
Moon landing. That's number one with a bullet. That's sort of what got me into the conspiracy game. I am out on us ever being to the moon. So that is,
I remember us having this conversation like when we first worked together, and I was like, what a weirdo. And then I thought about it, because I think all you said to me once was, how come we never went back? And I think to myself, this day.
My favorite response to people too is when they're like, Like, yeah, of course we have. And I'm like, would you bet your life that we have been there? And they're like, well, no. I'm like, okay, that's all I need. That's all I need.
I wouldn't bet my life. That
way to go right to like the top. Like, you all in on this. Would you die tomorrow?
Go ahead. That was good. And I don't even know if like aliens and things like that, to me, they're not even conspiracy. That's sort of like a next level thing. But I believe in all that stuff too. Like aliens, ghosts, you name it. So I'm there on that. What about you, Bill?
I don't really have any ones that I like truly, truly believe in. There's a couple of cool Hollywood ones that I would like to believe that are true.
Illuminati.
Like, you know, famous celebrities sleeping with other celebrities while they're out playing a baseball game or something. that's a good one. And then like, I don't know, like I want to believe like Bigfoot is real. Because at one point there were two Finding Bigfoot type shows. So like, I just don't want to think those people are out there just wasting their time. And didn't you talk to a guy who claimed to have
killed
two of them?
He killed two of them. Yeah, his name was Rick Dyer. Yeah, he killed two of them down in Tennessee. He lost one of them, and then the government took the other one from him.
Pretty
convenient.
He doesn't
have the bodies with him anymore, but he killed two of them. Good enough for me.
Yeah, no, that's not. Okay, well, no Bigfoot. Out on
no, Bigfoot. So then, this is my favorite thing. So we would always talk conspiracies with Rossi, and I'd go on, and I'd be naming all these different ones. And he's like, no, I don't know about that. And we're, you know, then you get into, like, you know, JFK and some of the other ones. And Rossi was like, no, 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 no. Then he's like, I do believe in lizard people, though.
I do believe there's a higher, like all the presidents of the United States, aside from one,
Freemasons.
Freemasons. There's something there too. Yeah. And you think they live in the center of the earth as well?
They are. They're born in the center of the earth, and then they're brought out to be the presidents or powerful people in our country. Yeah.
Got it.
You
got
to look at some of the blinking. There's great videos. I remember I used to have a lot more time on my hands, and I used to watch these videos of like presidents, the way their movement and stuff, and like their eyes. Like, there's this crazy video of George W. Bush. Like, he blinks, and then the middle eye blinks too. It's freaking weird. So that made me, I'm like, yeah, this is probably real. Because think about it. How do you become a president? Like, how does that really happen?
Yeah.
I mean, voting? Yeah. I feel like
important. People don't. Oh, that's a whole other conspiracy there. When we get into those ones. But I will just say this. This will be as controversial again. I don't believe Donald Trump was a lizard person.
You don't?
No.
Interesting.
I think he broke the system. And I think that's why he is the position. Well, many others. Exactly. But I will just say that I think he messed everything up. I think people got upset. So I think Joe Biden, absolute lizard.
So
and this is nothing to do with politics.
Yeah. Would a conspiracy theory be like, does size matter? Would that be one? Because I think
that's my wife.
Trying to debunk. Yeah, all right.
Yeah, we're the wrong people to ask.
That'll do for our conspiracy theory portion of this show. And let us favorite conspiracy theories, you can tweet at Billy Yee, at Pop Culture PD, at Jason Yerossi, and hell, at Dork Podcast. They're always down to banty about some of the wonderful conspiracy theories out there. A couple things here. There was a Nintendo Direct. We don't overly talk about video games on this podcast, but I'm still like a Nintendo nerd and I mark out for things. One thing that was bantied about, Bill, as we were talking about earlier, GoldenEye coming to the Nintendo Switch from the Nintendo 64 on your, console. I think it's a free ad. I don't know if they're going to start making us pay more for that. I hope not. Question is, can we play multiplayer on that?
I think you'd have to.
I don't know, though.
Have you ever played the original Mario Kart with anybody else? Or like any of those things on the Nintendo, like the, what is the virtual console, like whatever they call those?
I guess not. You probably can't. But like that's the whole like draw of GoldenEye. Like I'm not gonna play the story.
Yeah.
Yeah, you gotta do
that. No, that's actually, I'm gonna say low-key, great storyline game though.
I never owned the game. I only played it at other people's houses actually. So I never played the storyline of the game.
I've always thought that's a great topic to talk about. Like, how many games that are super popular did you not own but played enough over somebody else's house?
Yeah, that's for me. Every N64, I didn't own an N64.
Neither did I.
My best friend did. So really? I played Kart, GoldenEye, all the other
WrestleMania's. Popular
games just over at him. WrestleMania.
So were you PlayStation boys? Were you guys where'd you go?
I was PlayStation, and then like later in life, probably like when I was in like maybe a freshman in college, I bought an N64 and all the games that I liked because I just wanted to play them still.
Makes Smart. Sense.
Yeah, I went original Nintendo, Sega, PS1, PS2, Xbox 360, PS4.
I've never owned an Xbox, just all the PlayStations.
Journey. Yeah, I went Nintendo, Sega. I never had a Super Nintendo, which I'm still like angry about a little bit, but Sega was awesome. Then went N64. I followed all the Nintendo and then eventually jumped. I got a PlayStation because my friend could hack it, so we could get all the free games, which is amazing. Nice. PlayStation 3 was the best. And then, I've been an Xbox and Nintendo. Yeah. I never went there. Actually, no, I had a PlayStation 4 and I threw it away when they got rid of Nessun, even though somehow made its way back up to my living room. Just random. I don't know how it came back. It was recycled. And then the other news coming out of that is that the new Zelda game, people thought would be Breath of the Wild 2. Zelda's never had a direct sequel game, like name-wise. This one will be called Tears of the Kingdom. It's going to be coming out in 2023. I'm a huge Zelda mark, so I'm going to be very excited for that. The only other thing, and Keith, I listened to your podcast before this, and Davey had mentioned again when we played that cart about the show The Patient.
Yeah.
So just two quick things. One, I couldn't recommend that show more. Your theory, I saw the latest episode, which I think it didn't Don't change it. And I'm not going to explain it here.
All right. I want to watch that next. Yeah.
Yeah. I will just say, Bill, if you watch the show, it's less than 25 minutes per episode.
Is it a sitcom?
It's a drama. It's a with Steve Carell.
Drama.
Yeah. So it's odd. Like they're going after like the Apple. Like a lot of those Apple shows are only like 30 minutes, some of them. I think the morning show might be 40, but like this is where Steve Carell like kind of got his new like lease on like drama, and he is knocking it. Like I already could see the Emmy nods for this show. But it's a really intriguing show. I don't want to say too much because not that I can give anything away, but basically like he plays a therapist and he's held hostage. And you gotta watch this one. And the last thing, because we recapped, I think I saw Keith, I think you guys talked about last week. Billy's been telling me to watch it. I finally watched the rehearsal.
Ooh, all right. Let's talk about this for a second.
first episode, I could have watched 2 more hours. That was amazing. After that, complete snore fest. Couldn't watch any more of it. The guy is not intriguing enough to me. And I watched the last one purposely again because I fell asleep during it. And I don't think any of it's real. I think it was stupid. And
conspiracy theory. You think that show, the whole thing's a work.
Yeah, that's acting. They're all acting.
Well, they're definitely I mean,
I don't think any of it is real. I think it's a show portraying reality. It's actors portraying that they're being placed in a real place. Yeah, which I think the point of the show was like, do you believe it's real or do you believe it's not? I think it's absolutely not real. The first one though was amazing.
The first one, like that guy, I think is 100% real, and like the Door City joke fucking floored me. And then when they prepared it, like the reveal on top of that reveal is like one of the best moments in television in like the last like 5 years. Like that blew my fucking mind.
You've watched the show Severance.
It was like Severance like when they reveal like once they show they went in and recreated his apartment and then they recreated the fucking bar to like exact scale, and then he takes it with them. That's the best gimmick of the show. But like, to me, like it would have been great if he kept going down that road. And then towards the end, I just found him to be kind of a monster when he's like keeps going back to a little kid. Like no, he knows that's... the kid likes him, thinks he's his dad. It's like one thing to be like, oh, I shouldn't have done this. But like he took another kid to research it, and that's where I think maybe they were all in on it. But even still, to me, that's too much.
Yeah, I'm with you, Rossi. The first episode's hilarious, and I loved the first episode. I thought it was so great. It was so impressive for them to be able to just duplicate all these settings. I thought it was awesome. And they dealt with a couple of adults. And again, the guy's issue is like so hilarious. Classic. He's lying to his trivia team. Like hilarious. It's really pretty harmless and funny. But then after that, I think he probably wanted to make more episodes like that. And he had a couple of issues. He had the one guy that flaked out on him, right? Mm-hmm. The one guy that was there and then it was like, this is getting weird, and just took off. You never saw him again. The guy that you met in the chicken place.
Mm-hmm.
And then it would have been really funny if the one dude stayed with the woman.
Oh my God.
That guy left the first night. Remember, like she found him and he was like, oh yeah. And he clearly thought he was going to go get laid and he didn't. Mm-hmm. And he just bailed. If the two of them were together, as soon as he put himself in as the father figure, I was like, I don't like this. This kind of defeats the purpose of what I think even he wanted the show to be. And then the kid shit, although it's funny, I watched the show after hearing about what a monster he was, and everybody's like, I didn't like the last episode. That's what everybody was saying.
Yeah.
So I actually was expecting it to be worse. Like, I thought he was going to be like, you know, keep playing it up, keep going back to the guy, and then being like, you know, throw him a birthday party or something and tell him he's going to be there and then not show up like any asshole real dad would do in real life or something like that. Or like literally like be right there with him and then be like, I got to go get a pack of smokes. Jesus. And never come back. I thought that's what was going to happen. And then send the cameras to get the, but he didn't do that, but it was still pretty bad. And I didn't like it. And it's not, I'm glad I saw it because it is such a unique show, but it's not one of my favorite shows of the year.
The first episode was, I thought, going to be amazing. Nathan For You was similar to like that, but like that was also towards the end. It got super like you could tell the people like were in on it and or they knew what was going to happen because that's like the charm of it at first. Like this is just some random Canadian trying to like do like a mini doc or whatever. So it did kind of wear thin quickly, but I think that first episode was just like you guys, it's worth just
amazing.
That.
Amazing. If that was like its own little mini documentary and that was all, like I could have got another hour out of that and I was entertained. Yeah. Like you said, I think the best part is and the funniest part of it is that he's just telling a teammate on a trivia team that he doesn't have his master's degree.
The funniest part is he's slipping.
Who the hell can?
He's slipping in the trivia answer. Like casual. I cursed the Japanese for inventing gunpowder on this day in 1978.
Oh my god! When in like the settings, this is not real. The way people spoke, like it's just two construction workers saying random things. Like
there was a cop, and then some guy was holding his like family hostage.
I know, but that guy
would buy it.
Perfect. I really do. Unless that guy's the greatest actor of all time. I don't know, man. I feel
He's an actor.
I don't know.
They're all
nominated for an Emmy then and put him in the next like fucking big budget movie.
I think my big takeaway from that show, if it was either just that as like a one piece takeaway or it was like three episodes, it's just in the middle of all that. I'm just like, I feel like I'm just watching the same thing repetitively and I'm just like, and I just knew something at the end everybody was talking about. Absolute bull crap. Not real. Get out of here. Nice job by this guy to get some buzz around him though. Bill, anything you want to get off your mind there?
I need to start with House of Dragons. I haven't really been watching a ton of stuff lately, but I've heard that's pretty good. I was going to be completely out on it, but enough true Game of Thrones fans are like, nah, it's legit. It's worth it.
Yeah. Obviously, Keith, you guys on Dork are heavily covering it. You're doing weekly episodes with other things. I have not jumped in yet. I haven't had that moment of it. Like I'm now regretting Better Call Saul. Like I didn't jump in on that, but I feel like I missed something. I can still watch it, I understand. But like this is a show I haven't gotten that yet. I don't know if I'm gonna get there, if it's gonna be something maybe after the season. Obviously Emmys were last night, so now there's a lot of shows. I'm like, oh maybe like White Lotus, everyone's like, watch that. I'm like, nah, I don't got time. But I don't know. When something wins, like I don't know, maybe does it give
it one?
Yeah, it won for best short series miniseries.
It wasn't in the heavy hitter category was drama.
Yeah, Squid Game.
Who won that? Squid Game?
Squid Game, right?
Did they?
No. Squid Game won for Best Actor, Best Director. Best Drama was... why is it... I literally had this all written down a minute ago.
I'll pull it up right here. Oh, Succession won.
Succession, sorry. And that's a show I've not watched.
I've watched all eight of these. I liked all of them very much. I would have given it to either Better Call Saul or Yellow Jackets. But Severance was great. Stranger Things was great. Euphoria was great. Squid Game was great. And Ozark was great. But I like Succession, so I have no problem with Succession. But apparently there's a weird thing where it's all about like where in the calendar it's released. And because Better Call Saul split their season, the final six episodes actually qualify for next year.
I also heard
there were some major scenes in that, so it's like everybody's saying they got snubbed again, which they did. They've now been nominated for 50 Emmys and they've never won any of them, which is
really
Bob Odenkirk's never landed one for that show.
Better Call Saul has not won for anything.
I understand actors, but not like cinematography or one of those like random.
Better Call cinematography, Saul, it might be the best,
but I'm just saying like usually they're gonna throw a dog a bone.
but I don't think they do cinematography.
No, maybe I'm just throwing out, like, if there's been 50 nominations, though.
Over what do you mean by that? Like, it's camera work on that show. Like,
no, no, I mean Emmys. I don't think it's an Emmy award, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm saying Emmys.
50 awards, not like a.
Yeah.
Like, how do they not have cinematography? That's crazy.
I don't know. It looks TV's like. I think it's just acting, directing, writing. I think that's it.
You're right. But even still, like, one of those categories are all the
that's
years,
crazy. Like, television's come too far.
Yeah, right.
But here's the other problem with that. Next year, they're probably going to sweep then because they always do those, like, I don't know if the show is that big. Like, I know it's big. Don't get me wrong. But I don't know if it's, like, Sopranos, like, final season type. Like, we're going to give it all to them because, like, thank you so much for an amazing show. Kind of, like, I don't know if they do that anymore.
No, it's actually not at all. The final season averaged, like, less than 2 million viewers, maybe like 1 million something.
Really?
And so, like, House of the Dragon apparently is doing like 10 million
every week. Yes, that's our 11, I think, last night
on HBO too. It's not like it's.
Yeah, it's killing it, and that's why I like House of the Dragon. I think it's. I wasn't sure after the last season, but again, when Game of Thrones is at its best, it's when it was just taking stuff from source material, and that's what this is. He wrote some of these like short stories about Targaryens, and so that's what this is. So I'm like, so far so good. I've been enjoying that.
There you go. Keith, anything you want to get off your chest? Anything that's been...
No, you guys hit on it. The Patient, House of the Dragon have both been good. I'm looking forward to some of the... there's a Tales of the Jedi show. Oh, this, Rossi, this is right up your window. Did you see the trailer for Guillermo del Toro's Cabinet of Curiosities?
Yeah, I'm all in on that.
Yeah, same.
I'm looking... And that's coming out...
Just before Halloween.
Yeah.
Just before Halloween.
My prediction on this will be Halloween Ends will come out, disappoint everybody, and then a different movie will come out and make everybody happy. And anybody who wants to put out any content around the spooky season, just do it like 4 days after Halloween.
Yeah, it'll be like this year's Fear Street. Fear Street, everybody loved last year, and then this will be like that. So, yeah, more spooky there was a couple, stuff in your air.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I think Guillermo del Toro has like, a good track record too that I don't think anybody really talks about.
Oh yeah, it's great.
Like he's not like I feel like bantied about like Emma is going to put a movie or like what's his name who did Nope and I can't think of his name Jordan Peele. Like I think there are like Jordan Peele to me is done. Like I'm already over him. Like I didn't see Nope, but I don't think
he Orson Welles'd himself. He came out with his best movie first.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a problem. Yeah, Wiggy saw Nope and absolutely hated it.
Really? Hated it.
Although I don't always see eye to eye with Wiggy in his movies, but he was telling me it's the worst movie. I'm like, okay.
Well, you hated Us, and I know a lot of people that like loved Us.
Yeah, yeah.
Us was not
my favorite.
No, here's the problem with Jordan Peele. It's built as one thing, and then he does the Shyamalan kind of like twist, and it's like, oh, look at this deeper, darker message. You don't get it. Don't do that to me. I just want to go watch a good movie and I want to be like scared or I want to like nice twist or whatever. Like this Nope thing started off as like weird crap in the sky and clouds. Next thing you know, you see aliens like before the movie's released. You see like a spaceship. I'm like, what are we doing?
Right. Yeah.
But anyways, I think I'll do it here. But well, first off, we got to give all the plugs for the people that are still here. This week in
the Shared Gooniverse.
Alrighty, this week in the Dork Shared Gooniverse, Dork did House of Dragon, episode 4. Are you guys doing them just every week now until it ends?
I think that's the plan. We might interrupt it for like She-Hulk, and if something big is coming up, we might interrupt it.
When does it end? What about Dorktober?
There's 10 episodes. Oh yeah, so Dorktober's gonna be tricky because we're gonna do Halloween Ends for sure. Oh. And have to do House of the Dragon. It's just the most popular show going. But yeah, we're gonna mix and match and do some other stuff too.
Gotta hit the Googles. Gotta get on the Google searches. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then Mac and Hugh did the 1989 classic Aliens, CMC Talkie Equipment, and D23 Expo Wrap-Up, TLDR Talk Books, and Pineapple Boys coming back at you with the Season 5 premiere of Psych. We are about halfway through the show.
And then what are we doing? Perfect Strangers? Is that what
it's going to be? It's a Rizzoli and Isles podcast after Psych.
And you know what the funny part is? First of all... You wouldn't get any listens on that, but you really should figure out the next show. I think you should do another show.
No, I think I want to do Breaking Bad as the show and see if I can get Joe on board with that. I'm sure there's a million of them anyways, but it's just I love Psych, but this has made me like it even more. And sometimes I watch these episodes like six times during the week because I just have them on while I'm like doing graphics and stuff. Yeah. It's pretty crazy. But
6 times you watch the same show?
I just have it on repeat. It's kind of like background noise. Yeah, I know. I'm a little bit of a psycho. So,
speaking about psycho, can you reveal? I don't know if Keith started this point. Do you watch the show in double time though?
No, I don't. I listen to podcasts in 1.25.
But you used to do it in 2 time, didn't you? Used to do like you used to tell me like
yeah, I can't listen to us in like all of the DSG. Like everybody kind of talks fast enough, but like the Bruce Pritchard podcast, like they talk.
Let's go. Like, yeah, let's go.
This and like if you don't stuff. Listen to it in double time, like those things are 3.5 hours anyways, and they talk.
It's a meal, like, Bill. It's meaty.
They're asleep.
Got it. All right. Well, listen to all those podcasts. Keith, plug yourself. Tell people where to find you for the people that are on like my personal Facebook that don't know who you are.
At Dork Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, and subscribe on our YouTube channel. We stream live Monday nights, and then our podcast is available wherever you happen to get your podcasts.
Yes, and also check out Keith as part of Gresham Keith, 10 to 2 every single day. Question, and maybe I could take this off, and you can just tell me, Willie McGinnis still a guest?
No.
Good.
Oh.
That's all.
Good.
Yeah, he is not. He is at least definitely not on our show. I don't think he is on the station either.
No. The guest in Michael Irvin back? You got Michael Irvin back?
Yes, we have Michael Irvin.
Yeah, so you got all your good. I heard Tommy Curran. Yeah. You got Irvin. Curran, you got Irvin. Yep. The players, like whatever, but those guys. Players. Yeah, but Curran was always good, and Michael Irvin is like literally must. I don't care where he is; he's must listen to.
Yeah.
He makes everything seem personal. All right. Anyways, we're gonna get out of here. Bill, we'll be back next week. What do you want to do? Tier belts next week, or you want to do music lawsuits? Flip a coin. We'll figure it out throughout the week.
Sounds good to me.
Love it. Enjoy yourselves, Bill. Any final words for our fine folks?
Slap it on the biscuit.
Frank says hi.